Welcome to the Reggie's House podcast. My name is Mike Swanson. We thank you for joining in. I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, Andrew Roman. Andrew, how are you doing this fine evening?
Just great. We're post-election now, so, you know, lots of emotions there, and I don't want to necessarily get into it because this is a hockey podcast, not a current events podcast necessarily, but I think we can all sympathize with that feeling.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I'm exhausted from it. If nothing else, I'm just exhausted from thinking. And I know you and I were just talking a little bit before this started. And I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting to watch as we go forward. But I really don't want to talk about that because I feel like there's a lot of bleak and doom and gloom surrounding that. So instead, I want to talk about things that are exciting. For good reasons, namely the play of the Pittsburgh Penguins over the past 10 days or so.
Yes.
But honestly, like, there's not a whole ton to recap from this past week. So I figured eventually we'll get into some of the more nitty gritty of some of these fun advanced stats. But we have a notable departure, not necessarily because there's a huge hole in ice time.
Yes.
But it's a big deal for other things. So if you're not familiar, the Pens traded Mike Condon to the Ottawa Senators for a fourth-round pick or a fifth-round pick?
I think it was fifth.
Fifth, okay. But if you're, again, if you're not familiar, they claimed Mike Condon off of waivers from Montreal earlier this season and ended up trading him. So what do you think? What do you make of that?
Well, you know, I think it's pretty good resource management from GMJR. You know, I think the reality is that Condon probably wasn't going to get through waivers again. You know, I think certainly you look at Los Angeles's goaltending situation. Some of the teams are getting a little bit healthier, but I feel like I think Boston might even still be without like their normal backup, Anton Khudobin. And so there's just certainly a sense that probably if you put Condon on waivers to get him into the minors where he could actually, you know, play some games and maybe make a difference for the organization, if not the Penguins themselves, but so they realized they really couldn't do that. So instead they traded him to Ottawa. Ottawa's obviously dealing with some stuff as well. Craig Anderson, their kind of normal starting goaltender, unfortunately his wife was just diagnosed with cancer. So he's taken a leave from the team. So basically they took a guy that they paid nothing but his salary to acquire and turned it into a nice extra draft pick. So that's a job done, I would say.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, it's easy to look at that and say, you know, when was the last player that any team used that came out of the fifth round? Well, number one, there's lots of steals that go around from the fifth round. Let's not forget that the heart and soul of the Pittsburgh Penguins in Patrick Hornquist as DK Dejan Kovacevic wrote a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
The heart and soul of the Pittsburgh Penguins was the last draft pick of the Crosby draft.
Yeah.
And you think about other names like Jamie Benn.
Yep, Jamie Benn's a fifth rounder. Brendan Gallagher.
Henrik Zetterberg. Yeah, Henrik Zetterberg was, I think, a sixth rounder.
I believe you're right. So it was Gustav Nyquist, I think, actually.
So, I mean, number one, there's a chance, not a very good chance, but there's a chance. But the other thing is, you got to think that an extra pick helps to round out maybe a trade or something that GMJR is looking at. So to throw in an extra fifth as opposed to maybe a prospect or a 13th forward or a seventh defenseman.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, you know, I think we're seeing now that a lot of times teams don't have to maybe. It seems like the trade market for draft picks is changing. Like, teams are a lot more reticent to trade away their first round picks. And I think they're a lot more, and I think on the other side of that, teams are more willing to accept kind of, you know, mid to later round picks, because I think that tools are becoming a little bit more reliable when you're talking about scouting. And so you kind of know, like, who actually can play, and some, a lot of times you can actually get those guys later in the draft. I mean, I think a recent, I think it was a fifth round pick for the Penguins, is Dominic Simon. And I mean, that was a guy who, he was drafted in the fifth round last year and played in the NHL the same year. So there's something to be said for having any kind of extra asset like that.
Well, and I think, you know, it's just interesting to me just how that has changed from, you know, the sentiment even 10 years ago. I think it speaks to the quality of the players that you find in the NHL now and the players that are going later and later and later in the draft. And in that, honestly, that means nothing but good things for the game of hockey in years to come. To see that, like, you know, it becomes more and more routine. That, I mean, like last year that, or 2 years ago, the Art Ross winner was a fifth round draft pick.
Yeah.
That's a truly a remarkable thing. So, I don't know. I think it's good. I don't know that it necessarily is a game breaker for the Pens, but no. It's nice to see a little bit of a savvy trade that doesn't feel like it's going to shoot the Pens in the foot in the long run.
Yeah, certainly not. I mean, of course, you know, the first game that Condon got into in Ottawa, I think he did pitch a shutout. Oh, I also read, I think this was a Bob Grove tweet, and so I hate that Bob Grove isn't on the radio anymore. Like the Pens reorganized their radio broadcast team last year, and they kind of, you know, so he's not on anymore. But he did say that he is, of all of the 65-plus goaltenders who have ever played for the Penguins, you know, Condon did play 20 minutes in that Nashville blowout. He's the only one to never allow a goal.
That's true. He's pitching a perfect game.
Yeah. Perfect season so far. Yeah. That's pretty impressive.
Good for him. Just good for
yeah,
him.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I hope it works out for him. You know, I liked when the Pens made the acquisition, but when it became apparent that they weren't about to then turn around and trade one of their, you know, more kind of premium goaltending options, then it was kind of like, well, you know, let's just not mess this up and lose them for nothing. And they didn't. So,
yeah.
So perfect.
Well, and I want to circle back to the Pens goaltending, but for now, I just want to keep rolling with looking at the lineup as it is. I mean, reality, Condon is probably if we actually rank them out, is probably about the fifth name, down on the goaltending chart, the depth chart for the Pens.
Yeah, truly.
And you include, you know, Tristan Jarry and, Gustafsson or whatever his name is.
Yeah, Phil Gustafsson.
There you go. But I want to talk about some of these lineup changes that we've seen over the past couple games that Sullivan has been rolling with.
Yeah.
It's interesting because as I look through our notes right now, I'm seeing a little bit of salt from the one Andrew Roman. for those of you that don't get to see this, which is none of you except for me. Here's a verbatim quote from Andrew Roman. Quote, "I don't want to play a game of I told you so, but if the Pens had listened to the first episode of our podcast, they could have saved themselves some time on coming up with the lines that they've rolled out recently."
Yeah.
First of all, I laughed out loud when I read that because it sounded very paternal, if nothing else.
Hey. Sometimes you get lucky when you're thinking about things and they just happen to kind of be perfect and somebody else out there who you've never talked to and probably never will meet in your lifetime happens to share something in common with you in the way that he's thinking too.
Well, so for those that don't know, let's just talk a little bit about what the actual lineup has been over the past couple of games.
Yeah. So,
yeah, go for it.
Well, so the new look first line is it's Sidney Crosby in the two suite. So you have Carl Hagelin on the left wing and you have Patrick Hornquist on the right. I mean, obviously, you know, I think for as long as Hornquist remains in Pittsburgh, you know, if it's just through next year, because he will be a UFA after that, or if they bring him back for another go round, you know, I think he's always going to be kind of attached at the hip to Crosby just because he is that perfect complement that, you know, just go to the net. You know, create turnovers in the offensive zone and just make things happen. And then on the other side of that, you have Carl Hagelin, who kind of finally, you know, I think the one maybe knock that you could make on Hornquist is that he doesn't bring a lot of that mobility or extreme speed that Crosby is good with. But then obviously with Hagelin, you have that option. And, you know, he's certainly a burner. And I think the thing with Hagelin, like $4 million, like, you got to get a little bit of production out of him. And I think so far this year, he had been struggling pretty good, but just not finding that kind of same rhythm that he had last year, like with the HBK line. But I think since you've seen him playing with Crosby, I want to say he had like four points in like five periods since they made that lineup change. And that's before like the Edmonton game.
Well,
yeah, so pretty
over
good.
Over the past four games, he's got 5 points. So let that, yeah, it's, I mean, he's doing all right by it. I like that line because it's got a lot of balance on it, but like it still has an identity. So one of the things that the Pens have suffered from in the past is that it's either been all identity and it's just like, this is what our line does and this is where it goes. And everyone knows that and it's easy to shut down, or that there's been chemistry, but not really doing any type of executable like or sustainable type of play. And so I love this line because it's a balanced line. It's fast. It's hard to play against, not in like a necessarily a nasty way, but like when you have Hagelin and Hornquist forechecking like they do, and you can let Crosby come in and just read the play like he is so good at doing, that's a hard line to play against.
Oh, absolutely.
It's such a hard line to play against. Yeah. And I think there's a reason that Sidney Crosby has, you know, 8 goals in 7 games or whatever he's up to now.
Yeah. Was leading the league in goal scoring before Patrick Laine decided to have his second professional hat trick in 14 games.
Dude, can we talk about the fact that kid is Alex Ovechkin Jr.?
Yeah, but I mean, I like it. And like, but I feel like he probably isn't as well-rounded, and that's kind of a loose term to use with Ovechkin, given that we know his propensity for playing defense. But like, but he has wheels as well. I mean, and not that like Ovechkin was ever a slow skater by any stretch, but there were certain limitations to his skating. It was like, put him in a straight line and like he'll be one of the fastest in the league, but make him like actually move with the puck and it's a little bit of a different story. But like Laine just he brings even more of that.
Well, and I think that's what you're seeing, you know, just league-wide right now, the infusion of talent that you see coming out of this draft class and the draft class from the year before. Like, all of these kids have the same skill set. It's just to varying degrees.
Yeah.
Like, they're all good skaters. They all have a really high hockey IQ. They're good shots and they're good passers. Like, you don't have, like, I mean, Line A is the kind of like the odd bird out from the group.
Mm-hmm.
and he still fits the mold. Like, he's still in the line of best fit, if you will, for the rest of the group. He just might be a little bit more to one side than the other.
Yeah.
But the rest of the crew, and I'm looking at, you know, I'm thinking specifically of like your Max Domi's, your Anthony Duclair's like over in Arizona. You're looking at the Marner, Nylander, and Matthews combination up in Toronto.
Yeah.
And you know,
Dylan Larkin, like, I think, is another perfect example.
Jimmy Vesey, the kids down in Florida. I mean, like, they're all doing the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're balanced players. They're fast. They're exciting. Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, and Sam Bennett up in Calgary. I mean, like, they're all doing the same stuff. They're all so exciting to watch. And I love it because, like, the teams that are letting them play are the teams that are fun to watch. They might not be winning, but they're at least fun to watch.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a bit of a tumultuous road so far for Winnipeg. I mean, of course, I guess the nice thing for them is that they are probably going to get a lot better in a very short amount of time. Now that Jacob Trouba's decided to take a get-me-out-of-here contract.
Yeah.
I like the part where, like, his first quote after signing the contract was, "I'm rescinding my trade request." And it's like, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying you're not, but I'm pretty sure you're getting traded because like his contract, it doesn't make sense otherwise. I mean, even on a 2-year bridge deal, he's not a $3 million player. He's
no.
I mean, he should be making like Hampus Lindholm money,
right?
You know, at the very minimum. If not even maybe more, because like at least Lindholm like knows that he's going to a good defensive situation.
Right.
Now that he's back in the lineup. I think he's playing tonight for the first time. But, you know, so hopefully that'll lead to good things for Winnipeg. Maybe they'll allow a few fewer goals because, I mean, I do have Connor Hellebuck on my fantasy team. And when he plays well, he's like, I mean, he is one of the best, I think, you know, young stars in the league as well from the goaltending position. But a lot of times it's just, you can just tell that that team just does not have adequate defense to kind of stop the flow against him.
Yeah. And part of that is that, I mean, they have, that defense is built on the old school mentality, right? Like,
oh yeah. It's Tyler Myers and Mark Stewart. Like just right. That.
Well, and this is no knock against Dustin Byfuglien, but he's never been a mobile guy.
No.
Like, he's, I mean, mobile. He's like, for his size, yeah. But he's not a mobile guy.
No. I mean, I don't know that he necessarily, in kind of like the, in modern day NHL requirements, where like you have to, as a defenseman, even you have to be good at, you know, playing the puck in the corner. And I don't think that's his strength. You know, I think once he gets moving, I mean, I know, I think it was like at last year's All-Star game that he did like the fastest skater contest against Chris Letang, who we know is a very fast skater. And he, mm-hmm. and Letang barely beat him. I mean, it was close.
Yeah.
But, you know, but at a certain point, like just that kind of edge work and sort of being able to be nimble in a small area is just not something that a guy that's 6'5 and weighs 270 can do very well.
Right. Well, so here's the last thing I'll say about some lineups that are not black and gold.
Right.
And we had talked about this before, but I had seen somewhere on Twitter that was a, do you do a Trouba for Mata and Shiri?
Mm-hmm.
Do you pull the trigger on that?
Yeah. And I mean, my answer is yes. I would in a heartbeat. You know, I love Olli Maatta. I really do. But I also, now that A, you can, for at least this year and next, you could actually get Trouba for less than Maatta. Like, A, that's a really good thing because that gives the Pens some flexibility down the road. And B, Trouba is just, he is a fit for the Pens system, whereas I don't know that Maatta is ever going to get back to that point where his skating is good enough to truly maximize his talent in what the Pens want to do.
Sure.
So what say you?
I mean, I think that would be something that to me, this would be classic GMJR if it's in the works right now.
Yeah.
I think I would do it. I would go as high. I would even throw in a pick to go with that.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I think, you know, Trouba's, like, you got to look at it from the perspective of the Pens realistically probably have this year of Trevor Daley and that's it.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't really foresee a situation where he's coming back. You know, I think it's going to be a cap number issue. I mean, because once again, the Pens still have to pay Brian Dumoulin as well.
Right.
And I would rather, you know, if it comes down to it and you have the same amount of money that you gave Maatta available next year and your choice is 33-year-old Trevor Daley or 25-year-old Brian Dumoulin, it's, you know, that's a no-brainer to me.
Right, right. So for those exact reasons, I think if they could figure out a way to make it work with Trouba for the rest of this year, I don't know. I mean, you get into a little bit of a challenging spot because then you have three right-handed top four defensemen for the Pens in Letang, Trouba, and Daley. And Dumoulin is your only left-hander.
Well, no, Daley is left-handed, but he plays on the right.
Side.
Yeah. So, okay. And I mean, I know it's easy to like not necessarily notice because I've almost only ever seen him play on the left side or on the right side, I should say.
Right. Well, and so I think that's what it might make it a little bit more challenging because I think Trouba also plays on the right. So you've got Letang who likes to play the left, Dumoulin who plays the right. That pairing makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, you know, to me, it becomes a little bit more of a challenge there because like your right side is pretty well set. I mean, like, I don't know what you would do. Like, I don't know if Dumoulin can play the left, but like, would you do something where you like you bump Dumoulin to a Dumoulin Daley line, which we know was effective at the beginning of last season. And then you play like Trouba Letang as your top pairing. Because you're not going to play him in third pairing minutes with like Ian Cole, and bump Justin Schultz up or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I would think if anything, you just, I mean, personally, I think what I would do, I mean, I would keep that top pair together. And then I think if anything, I would just see if Daley is comfortable playing on the, you know, is comfortable playing on the left as opposed to the right. And I mean, I feel like I have seen him do it before. I think he did it a lot when he was in Dallas in particular. But he just, you know, pretty much since he came here, like, there just hasn't been much of a challenge. I mean, figure even at that, like, you know, Justin Schultz didn't arrive to the team until after Daly had already arrived.
Right.
You know, and so then, you know, I would see if he can do that on the left-hand side. And if not, maybe just like the changeup that you make is that you just, I mean, one thing that is true is I think Schultz and Cole in particular kind of flip-flop sides a lot, mm-hmm. even though, you know, Schultz is a right-handed shot and Cole is a left-handed shot. You often see Schultz on the left side of the ice, particularly in the attack zone, with Cole moving more to the right side. So, I mean, I wonder if then you just kind of do that same thing, like bump up Cole maybe, and then just have Schultz and Daly actually in positions where they're comfortable. And that could be your third pair, but, you know, that's a third pair that's still going to get 16 minutes a night.
Yeah. I'll say, well, I mean, this is just a kind of a side note, but how good have Cole and Schultz been?
They've been really good. I mean, I think one of my favorite players that defy like the statistical view is Ian Cole. And I feel like there have been some rough moments for him this year. I mean, I think sometimes he can get a little out of place, I feel like he's just a fine, solid defenseman that, you know, particularly in that third line role, like, you know, you can worry that he's your worst defenseman. And if he's your worst defenseman, then you have much bigger, or, you know, then you're in a really good spot. I guess I'll just put it right. That way.
Yeah, no. And that's not a knock on Ian Cole's play. Like,
no.
I just think that everybody else has been really, really good.
Yeah. And, you know,
including Justin Schultz.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Schultz has really impressed me. I don't know if he's going to get a huge look to maybe move up in the lineup, and like, unless there's another, you know, kind of injury. I mean, obviously Letang did miss a few games and that did lead to a boost in that pair's ice time, I would say, because then you kind of saw the team kind of move other people around. You know, Daly played a lot with Dumoulin, and then it kind of led to a situation where Motto was kind of on that third pairing with Dave Warsawski, you know, just for the sake of matchups, just because you needed to shelter Warsawski, I think, more than anything else.
Sure.
But, you know, that's been a bright spot. It'll be really interesting to see what does happen with Schultz beyond this. I mean, I wonder if, well, I mean, probably not in the sense that he'll be an unrestricted free agent anyway, but it's like, you kind of wonder if maybe he's somebody that could even pop up on a Las Vegas radar or something like that. I mean, even if he was one of those like kind of privileged sign before free agency kind of players.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that might be something. I mean, listen, he might be the poor man's 2008 Mike Green.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I don't know that he has quite that goal scoring knack, maybe, but, you know, I think he's a good player that makes things happen in the offensive zone in particular.
Yeah, yeah, he does.
You know, and I think one thing, you know, again, like the Pens have done a wonderful job of just kind of keeping him isolated a little bit, and, you know, and protected, I guess you could say. And in light of that, yeah, so I guess isolated isn't the right word, but, you know, but they've kept him protected. And in so doing, they haven't asked him to play that much defense. And I think he's been, you know, more than fine. You know, I think once again, I think a lot of teams would kill to have that guy at that price, as a number five defenseman. So,
yeah, absolutely. So we've successfully avoided talking about
the Penguins' forward lines for
right.
almost 15 solid minutes, I think.
Yeah, well, but that's it's interesting, yeah. Right?
Well, it is.
Things and reasons and stuff.
Yeah.
So, okay, here's what I want to talk about. Just in terms of the question marks, I think, that we kind of addressed at the beginning of the season, and you know, what's going on with the young kids, because we know what we have in the veterans, how are things going to shake out in a full season of the Sheary, Rust, Wilson, Kuhn-Hackl kind of,
yeah,
just three, powerball lottery, yeah, if you will.
Three spots for four guys if they're all healthy and playing.
Right. And so the way that it's shaken out so far has been that Wilson's been getting looks with Bonino and Rust, which has been just kind of a – it's weird, not in the sense that it's bad, but it's just a strange line combination to me.
Yeah, I don't – like, because I will say I don't think that line has as much chemistry. And I think that's even why we saw a little bit of – I mean, I almost want to say like Shiri's early goal in that Edmonton game. Was he playing with Bonino and Rust? I'm honestly not sure.
I believe that came with him on the fourth line. Okay. Actually,
and yeah, and then they, and then they boosted him.
Yeah, I believe that actually came off of the. There was a, maybe I don't remember who it was. It was one of the bottom lines, though. I do know that for sure.
Yeah, admittedly, I didn't like. I was like trying to get the game on, but I was like talking on the phone with my wife at the time, and like literally by the time I got it, the game turned on like a minute in, you know, he had scored that goal. So,
well, and to be fair, Wilson and Shiri had been doing a little bit of flip-flopping on this bottom two lines. Yeah. So it's hard to really say whether it was a line change or it was actually a...
Yeah, or if it was a scripted kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. But that said, so you've got... I think the Bonino-Rust combo I really like. I think finding them a third mate has been a little bit tougher.
Yeah.
And in the same way that Cullen and Fair has been great...
Mm-hmm.
And finding, and when Kuhnhackl's out of the lineup, which sneaky injury, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not really sure what's going on there, but he is currently injured. So that's why we're seeing both Wilson and Shiri kind of flip-flopping on those two lines. But this is more so a question about the way that Mike Sullivan has been using his lines. Is it at all concerning to you to see him juggle lines as frequently as he does? And I'm thinking specifically of how we used to see Peter Laviolette do that in Philly. They would just kind of like throw things up and down the lineup until something stuck.
Yeah.
Does that concern you at all?
I mean, maybe just a small amount. You know, I think there's a number of very good coaches, and for what it's worth, I think Laviolette is a very good coach, even if Nashville is getting off to a little bit of a slow start this year.
Well, that's because Peter Forsberg decided not to score any goals yet this year.
Same difference. Pretty much.
I was watching
same guy.
I was watching some Peter Forsberg highlights earlier today, so that's I've got the old man in my sights.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that Peter Forsberg couldn't still like put up 20 to 25. In an NHL season, but with that being said, you know, I think Philip at age 24, 25 is probably the better bet at this point.
I think you're right.
But yeah, that is kind of a bit disconcerting that he literally doesn't have a goal yet. But otherwise, you know, I think on one hand, I don't love seeing like in-game line matching, but I also think that like line mix and matching, but I think sometimes that's the only way that you can really actually see if something's working or not. You know, I think you can try things in practice all you want, you know, but I think, you know, a lot of times once NHL teams hit the regular season, like, you know, they're not working on, you know, sort of anything other than like line rushes and like specific, you know, trait abilities. It's not a lot of necessarily like, hey, let's like scrimmage for 5 minutes in this zone and see what works.
Sure.
You know, because that's a little bit, I think, too demanding maybe for players in the midst of the season. Not to say that they don't get worked hard in practice still. I think, you know, the story about the Maple Leafs last night, like literally doing a bag skate for so long that the ACC center just turned the lights off on them, which is kind of sad and a bummer, I guess, but
well, but they got crushed by the Kings. Crushed. Before that.
Yeah, 7-0, I
believe. 7-0. Lord have mercy.
Yeah, and that Kings team is not, I don't know, that team doesn't impress me very much. I mean, certainly the Pens also fell in overtime to them, but I mean, it just seemed like from what I saw of that game, and I didn't see all of it because it was so late, and I admit I kind of just went to sleep. But you know, but that was it. I mean, the Pens were just skating circles around that team, and they just
In typical Kings fashion, they had a goaltender who played really well. Mm-hmm. Like Budai played really, really well.
Yeah.
There was a number of third period saves that he made that kept the Kings in it, and they won in overtime. I mean, like that's what they do.
Yeah.
I mean, up to that point, their only four wins had come all in overtime.
Wow.
So they finally, their fifth win was finally, sixth win was finally a regulation win.
Jeez.
So
that's pretty crazy, actually.
I mean, and you say what you want about that, but you know what you get with the Kings, and it's the slog, it's the muck and grind.
Yeah, it's just wear you down and try to force overtime, and then they go from there. And you know, and I think Jonathan Quick is also one of the more premier shootout goaltenders, along with Marc-Andre Fleury.
Sure.
So, you know, they probably figure they can get a lot of points that way as well.
Well, it's true. It worked for the Pens still works for the Pens.
Oh yeah.
Except they don't have Disco Dan to make them run shootout drills and practice.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I feel like you can tell, like, that's been one of the things that I can definitely tell is different from like this team now compared to like 3 years ago, whenever he was still here, is just like, mm-hmm. Yes, they can still win a lot in the shootout just because they just have that overwhelming talent. But at the same time, you can also tell that they're not quite as crisp on their moves, and like they don't work on them as often as they used to, which I think is a good thing, because I think that was a waste of time.
Well, it's because they take that extra half hour and work on things like special teams or breakouts or passing or other things that matter for the other 65 minutes of the game before you get to overtime. Yes.
Tend to matter more in the big picture, particularly postseason-wise.
Right, right. But, hey, wish you luck, Disco.
That Buffalo team has been probably, actually, I would say, a step better than I think a lot of people thought they were going to be, especially after, you know, basically starting this year without any of their top-line players.
They still don't have them. Like,
Kane is coming back tonight as well, actually.
Good for him.
I guess.
Good for him. I really want to like him.
You know, sort of character complaints or whatever are, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to get into, like, any kind of racial tone setting or anything like that, but I feel like there's something else that's going on there that doesn't happen with a lot of other players in the NHL, and I'm just going to leave it at that.
Sure.
Yeah. Anyway, to get back to the Pens a little bit.
We've done a really good job of not talking about the most exciting part of the Pens. And specifically Sidney Crosby. Like, we've gone a really, really long time without zeroing in on just how well Sid has been playing over the seven games that he's been back.
I used to have a sort of general philosophy in a lot of what I wrote at different sites that I wrote for in the past when I was a lot more involved in that. And one of the things that I almost never, ever did was talk about Sidney Crosby, just because I just felt like there was nothing that I could like add to his story that wasn't being said better by somebody else. So I always just tried to look at the other, like the surrounding details or you know, kind of look at deeper, you know, lineup choices or things like that. But I do feel like this, I mean, to just go on like a 30-second discussion of Sid or not, it doesn't have to be. You know,
It can be more.
You know, I mean, so obviously he started the year on his 6-game point streak, had goals in all of those games, and just, I mean, was just, I mean, dominant, like as good as we've seen him to this point. And then in the 7th game that he played, which is this one against Edmonton, I don't want to, like, you know, kind of overstate it or wax philosophic about it, but it was like, I feel like, yes, McDavid had, you know, primary assists on all 3 goals that Edmonton had in that game. And from that perspective, I think he really, I mean, he was so impressive. I don't think I've actually seen like a whole game with him in it. You know, I think I've seen a lot of games or just like highlight clips or whatever, but it's like, no, he can't do that for the whole game. And then like seeing him last night, it's like, no, he does do that for the whole game.
He's really good. Like, he's really, I don't think I realized how fast he was until he, like, the Patrick Maroon goal, just, where he just skated around Brian Dumoulin, who is a really good skater, and he made Dumoulin look flat-footed after he had turned. Like, Dumoulin was with him, step for step, he turns, and then McDavid just hits this, like, extra speed boost kind of out of nowhere. And it just, like, was like, nah, I'm going to put an extra 8 inches between you and I, Brian. Is that okay? Okay. I'm going to skate around you now. Oh, it just did.
I mean, it was like, I feel like one of the like kind of great Twitter discussions that was going on last night after that play was just like, what, it, like, you know, what did Dumoulin do wrong? Or like, what kind of move did McDavid put on him? And it's like, nothing. I mean,
nothing.
Like, Dumoulin couldn't have played it better, really. You know, he drove him right to the point where, like, you didn't think that the pass could get through, but then McDavid just opened up, as you say, like that extra 8 inches of separation, and it was like this, like it became a slam dunk goal.
That's then. That's all he needs. Like, kid's elite. Like, legitimately.
Yeah. I mean,
elite.
Not to mention that, like, the play that he made earlier on that rush, where like he, like, just perfectly timed a fast moving poke check on Carl Hagelin, you know, the Pens' fastest player, to force that turnover, and then, you know, it just went from there. It was insane. But anyway, you know, so I feel like the thing with Sid is that he didn't end up with any points in that game, although I feel like he was kind of wrongly denied some assists just on bad breaks or whatever. I think both, like, he made the play that put the puck on net that turned into the, who actually got the goal? Why can't I think of it now? Was it Hagelin that got the goal? The first goal of the game?
Yeah.
But that, like, I think it went off of, well, he passed it to a defenseman, Letang or Daly, one of those two. And then they put a shot on net, which hit off of Hornquist's skate and then bounced out to Hagelin, which obviously then cost Crosby the assist, although he totally made the play happen. As well as on Sheary's game-winning goal, he got the puck to Sheary, but then it went off the defenseman, so then the assists went away. But it was just one of those games where, like, Crosby did show why he's so, just like, why he is an underrated defensive player as well, I would argue. You know, I think he just was manipulating all of he was making the whole game go. He just didn't get any points for it.
Yeah. So there's a, we're going to put a link in the description, and this is mostly, I'm telling you, Andrew, to do that. There's, this dude on YouTube who, I'd seen a couple of his videos, and then, which are fantastic. They're all about Sidney Crosby, and they are, the Dangle podcast made a reference to him. It's this dude who, like, the one that I specifically am talking about is called Sidney Crosby, the Art of the Backhand. And it's just, it's legitimately 10 minutes of Sid just wrecking people with backhands just over and over and over again. And you see him, there's one of those, there's one on puck protection, and there's one on edge work that this dude has done all that are just 15 minutes of Sidney Crosby.
Sounds delightful.
It really gives you an appreciation for how good Sid is at what he does. And I think what we're seeing now, and this is the big difference between the Sidney Crosby of, you know, kind of the slump of Sidney Crosby in early 2015 as compared to what he's doing right now. And like these, like the vintage Crosby redirects the puck battles in the corners, the stick lifts, and just like controlling the puck, protecting the puck coming around the neck. All of these things that you're seeing Sid do kind of on a night in, night out basis, where he legitimately is, like, even if he doesn't have the puck, is controlling play. It's why he's so good. And I think right now, like, everyone in the hockey world is asking as to whether or not Connor McDavid is going to overtake Sidney Crosby this year as the best player in the world. And I think that day is coming soon, maybe sooner than I want it to be. But one of the things that I don't see with McDavid is that you don't see him controlling the game if he doesn't have the
puck. No, that's very true.
And that's not to say that he's a bad player. In fact, three primary assists any game is a very, very good game. But he has to have, I think at this point in his career, he still has to have the puck to control the game. And if you recall, I mean, that's exactly the first year of what Sid was in the league, right? He had Lemieux to lean on so that Mario could control the game get Sid the puck, and then, you know, Sid scores 50 goals, right? Like, that's just kind of how it went. That I think that's something that you learn. Number one, you earn that respect when you show up as a rookie and score 50 goals, like, you get circled on the highlight films for the what the coaching staff is trying to put together in terms of those tape sessions. You earn that. And I think that everyone knows that McDavid is really, really good, but he still hasn't necessarily – this is going to sound like I'm really curmudgeon-y, and I'm part of the nucleus of caring.
This is old school hockey talk, I feel.
But it's not. Like, I'm trying to make it that way. But, like, he hasn't necessarily earned enough of that clout just yet to draw people in the same way that Sid does. And I think that, like, because, listen, you watch Sid behind the net, and, like, it's one of those things where, like, you watch him start to, like, protect the puck, and, like, the best that you can do is just limit him. Right? Like, and it's like you exhaust people doing that. But then when he doesn't have the puck, it's the same thing. Like, you just have to kind of stick to him and hope that he doesn't find an open space.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Like, so he just commands respect everywhere on the ice right now. And I don't think McDavid commands as much respect in, like, the offensive zone, specifically in the corners and on the half wall that Sid does. And I think he's got to develop
that. No, I completely agree with all of that. I think, it's one of those things where, you know, once again, it's like, even, you know, in talking about playing without the puck, and it's like, Sid, you know, if it weren't for the fact that Jonathan Toews can only score about 2/3 as many points as Sid can, like, you know, I feel like he should get more consideration for the Selke, you know, just because he's so good without the puck and he can still control games even when he's not playing with the puck. Which I think is truly the mark of, like, an actual good defensive forward. But, you know, so there's that. Right. And then, like, the other thing is, you know, kind of getting back to that allegory a little bit, it's like, he was kind of reminding me a little bit of, like, just one of those, like, elite, like, attacking midfielders in soccer. And just, like, he's a guy that literally just by his ability to move either with the puck or ball or whatever you will, you know, he can basically get his team to be in a perfect position to do something incredible just by the way that he moves and the kind of attention that he commands.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what's going to make him so special. I think, you know, it's funny. I don't know if you caught this part of the broadcast, but, like, listening to Steichy was jabbing Bob Airy about like, after Patrick Maroon scored that goal where he just kind of drove to the net and, like, McDavid just essentially shot the puck in off of Maroon's stick. And he said, you know, Steichy was like, well, Bob, you scored a couple goals there off of Mario doing that to you, right? And Airy just didn't say anything.
Because it was so true.
Because it was 100% true. But I think at some point, like, does Connor McDavid need someone else to play with him that's going to be as fast as he is?
They had that
because
guy.
I can't help but feel that Milan Lucic and Patrick Maroon, or even Jordan Eberle for that matter, is like, they're just not fast enough to play with McDavid. Maybe they should call up St. Louis about this guy named Neil Yakupov.
Well, there was that guy, and there was another guy too. The other first overall pick that they traded this past year.
Oh, wait, what's his name? Yeah. Oh, Taylor Hall.
You know, only has contributed, like, 7 goals, I think, himself so far this year. On a just offense-replete team in New Jersey. I don't know. I mean, that was one of the things that I was kind of walking away from this game, like, just kind of feeling. It was like, yes, like, I'm, like, I loved that game because it was just so much great action. And, you know, I think... You know, I think the Oilers are a much, much better team than they have been at any point in the last 10 years.
They are very large,
I mean, they actually have good size. Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
they're a big team.
They're kind of
a big team.
Well, I mean, I think you look at Peter Shirelli's, you know, Boston blueprints, and, like, those were pretty big teams as well. I mean, they've kind of moved away from that since he left. but like with the exception of, you know, kind of like your Brad Marchand, even though obviously he was a kind of physically imposing player in a different way. You know, I mean, you know, David Krejci's a really big guy. I mean, Bergeron is, I mean, he's like that same kind of stocky existence as like Sid is, you know, just, and they had a Ginla for a while and so on and so forth. So I think there is, that's kind of the Shirelli mold a little bit. And it's also obviously the Western Conference mold, certainly. You look at the other teams in their division anyway, and it's like, yeah, those are the big, like big heavy teams that just want to wear you out, as we talked about with the Kings. But yeah, it's, you know, I mean, that team's way better than they were before, but I still, like, it's really hard to root for them still. Like, I mean, and I don't want to call them out for like one bad game, because I feel like this was just a bad game. But like the guy that they got for Taylor Hall, Adam Larson, like he took an egregious penalty early in the game. The Pens didn't capitalize, but that was just like the power play where they just, their movement was so great. They just couldn't really get a clear lane to get a good shot on, which, you know, what? I'll take the good movement. Like, it's been a long time since the Pens have had that even. Sure. So I'll take that. Then he was the guy who literally was falling down when Gino scored his goal, just because he just got toasted.
Yeah. Well, I want to say, I mean, again, Ari was talking about, he used the phrase at one point, that the Oilers are the new kings of the Pacific Division. And let me just say, like, first of all, that's not really anything to brag about. Like, I mean, I look down at this, like, the rest of this division, and here, I'm looking at it right now. Here's the standing. So you have Oilers, Sharks, Ducks, Kings, Canucks, Flames, Coyotes. Okay, that's about what you would expect. Maybe the Canucks are a little higher, whatever. Last. But, like, here's the records. Here's the records, and most of them are 13 or 14 games played. Oilers, 9-4-1. Sharks, 7-6. Ducks, 6-5-2. Kings, 7-6. Canucks, 5-8-1. Flames, 5-8-1. Coyotes, 5-7.
Yeah, that's not good. I mean,
that is not a good division.
I mean, the Oilers record, I would say, is probably nothing to scoff at. But, like, and no, for what it's worth, I believe the Sharks will get a lot better. You know, I think they've had a little bit of a rough start to the season. I think they've had some injuries, and not to mention that they've just been toasted by the Pens twice.
Yeah, they did get beat really bad by the Pens twice
already. You know, so literally it's a third of their losses this year has been just to the Penguins. But I think we already know that they're probably not a great matchup for the Pens.
No, they're not.
But nonetheless, it's, you know, I think that team's going to get better, but it's just like, I feel like the reason why the Oilers have a chance to be good in that division is just because they get to play against that division so much.
Yeah. Well, when you play the Canucks, what, five games a year, six games a year, you're probably going to do all right. I mean, like, they're not good.
I mean, I would say the Canucks and the Coyotes could very well, I think, you know, right now we're already looking at those two teams as possibly the two teams, like, in the running for the first overall pick next year, well, along with Las Vegas.
When are we going to start talking about the Western Conference as being?
Well, I think we're getting there. I think, you know, between, I mean, obviously the Pens have picked up where they left off, which I think is one of the best things possible for the league. Sure, the start of the year was maybe a little bit rocky, but it's been a good team. Like, I'm really not going to complain about things. You know, but then between that and just seeing like the surprising New York Rangers, I mean, I think they're riding a bit of a PDO wave. I honestly haven't really looked, but I just feel like their team shooting percentage has been unreal. It almost has to be like scoring six goals a game. But between them and the Canadians, as well as like knowing that Tampa Bay is going to be right there, and as well as Florida, you know, I think people are saying, you know what, like, the balance of power is in the East right now. And we haven't even mentioned the Capitals, who are, you know, they're playing fine. I think it's funny how much they're getting overshadowed by the Pens and the Rangers in the division right now.
Well, let me tell you a little story here. What would you guess is the Rangers team shooting percentage?
Team shooting percentage? If you had to guess. And I am thinking it's high, but I'm going to say, I mean, it can't be like more than 10%.
It is a 12.26%.
Oh, totally sustainable.
So, well, and so this is my point. I mean, let me tell you, here's why I think their PDO is only at a 103, which is, truth be told, not like through that. That's a sustainable rate. But when you consider, okay, again, for if you're not, if you're a listener and you don't know what PDO is, PDO is a comparison statistic that takes the team shooting percentage and combines it with the team goaltending at goaltending percentage or save percentage. And so, so what that means is that it kind of compares it to what the league average should be. So league average shooting percentage is assumed to be 8.5%. League average save percentage is assumed to be 91.5%. You add those up and you get 100%. And so if you have a better than average shooting percentage or a better than average goaltending percentage, it's above, you should be at least above 100. If you have worse than average, it should be below. And so anything that's above 100 means that you're above average. Anything that's below 100 means that you're below average. And so when you look at the way that the Rangers' actual PDO is 103 and their shooting percentage is 12.26, which means that they are a full 4% above the average shooting, like the average, but that means that they're getting worse than normal goaltending. We know that their shooting percentage is going to fall off a cliff at some point, whether it's during the regular season or the postseason.
So basically PDO is kind of viewed as a bit of a measure of luck in a sense, because it's just assumed that overall a team cannot continually shoot at above 8.5% for a whole year. Like a whole team anyway.
Right.
I mean, certainly certain players can, you know, when you look at a player like Sidney Crosby for his career, he's not a super high volume shooter. So he typically is between like 12 and 15% individually. But then you have other players, particularly defensemen, who probably their shooting percentage is going to be like 2%. And you have to factor in that against what Sid's going to do. So 8.5 is,
right,
you know, still kind of a decent shooting percentage. And then, you know, conversely, goaltending, right, yes, you'll have your Henrik Lundqvists who can put up, you know, consistent 930 save percentages, but then his backup is still probably going to be a lot more down to earth.
Well, and that means, so when inevitably the Rangers fall off a cliff with their shooting percentage, and let's just assume it goes back to the league minimum, is their goaltending going to be enough to carry them through? I don't know.
I'm still waiting to see, I mean, like the Henrik Lundqvist that we all know, you know.
Well, and that's the thing, is that we haven't really seen him yet this year. So is he going to come around? Let's not forget he got chased in what, two or three games?
Yeah, against, I think, the Penguins? it was at least three in the postseason. I almost thought it was like 4 out of 5.
And so
the only one that he didn't was the one they won.
So, well, and that's my point, is that like I'm not going to say that this is the new normal for Henrik Lundqvist, but I mean, he's not exactly, his past 25 games are not great.
And I feel like he was even a little bit shaky, even like at the World Cup of Hockey. I mean, not that that really matters that much, but I think that was, I kind of feel like he was one of the great barriers to them being a team that got to the finals, which I think is what a lot of people wanted to see. Because I think most people would argue that, well, not like so obviously we can't count the actual best American roster because it wasn't at the World Cup of Hockey, but you know, but I think,
but they cared, so Andrew. Much. They cared.
Tears
they cared
in the locker
so
room.
Much.
But,
oh, gosh, speaking of tears in the locker room, did you see that Phil Kessel, the T-shirt that he wore yesterday? fantastic, Phil.
Yeah.
Phil for president.
Technically, so we did. My buddy Brandon asked me about this, and I said, I think the limitation is he still won't be old enough next time. And that was, I think, his fatal flaw in the election this year, is that he actually wasn't old enough. He had to be, you know, 35 and what is he, 29, 28?
Yeah. Phil, Phil for president. That's all I care
about. We'll make
it
2024. It's a done deal.
Perfect. I'm in. So let's give, okay, so sorry to completely sidetrack you. Let's come back to, in terms of sustainability, I think this is how I think I want us to wrap up our episode today, because we're getting to be about that time. So we claim to be this hockey podcast about stats and strategies and all of those different types of things. I think we should dig in, because we've got an actual sizable sample from the Pens now, if not just like three games of shaking the rust off. And so I just want to ask the simple question right now, because the Pens have been playing well, right? They go to California and take 5 out of 6 points with, you know, 3 games and 4 nights, which was not easy on any of us. And then they come home, beat up the Sharks, and then win against the Oilers. Or no, I'm sorry, they did not beat up the Sharks. They beat up the Sharks in San Jose, which is good. But they come home and beat the Oilers in a comeback 3-1 from 3-1. So how sustainable is the Pens play? That's the question that's in front of us right now.
And I mean, honestly, you know, looking at you know, some stats sourced from Corsica.hockey, probably one of our favorite sites. I mean, honestly, it looks pretty good. I mean, you know, I don't think there's anything that is particularly fluky at all about what the Pens have been doing. I mean, so right now, their current goals for per 60 are 2.85, and their current goals against per 60 are 2.16. And so we can compare that to, and I don't know if you even want to just kind of explain about the expected goals and expected goals against there, Mike, if you want.
Yeah, so the expected goals for and against per 60 minutes, I think is pretty helpful, because it looks at things in terms of like what should be happening. And so there's a guy at Corsica who does all of this stuff. And he basically looks at a combination of 6 different factors that go into every shot that is generated. So whether it hits the net, whether it gets blocked or missed the net, every shot that is generated, he's looking at 6 different things. And those things are like things like what the type of shot is. So is it a wrist shot? Is it a slap shot? Is it a snap shot? Is it a deflection? Is it a tip-in? Is it a whatever the case is? He's looking at things like the distance from the net. He's looking at things like the strength of play, meaning is it a power play or a shorthanded situation or a 4-on-4, 3-on-3, et cetera, et cetera. Is looking essentially at all of these different things. And combining them together, assigning them values, and then coming up with running that against essentially data that gets logged in every game from all of these different types of shots. So, you know, looking at it how much does this single shot compare to other shots that have been taken like it? And then comparing that to the total number of shots that are generated, and how does that all factor together? This dude is way smarter than either of us. Let me be clear about that. And it's really nice that he has it kind of all typed out and figured out. And I'm thinking we can probably put a link in the description that if you're interested in understanding that better from somebody who is smarter than both of us, please do that. But the way to look at this and the way to understand it is that the expected goals for and against takes into consideration what should happen, whereas the goals for and against is what actually happened. And so we can start to look at and compare those and say, okay, are the Penguins outperforming what they're actually doing, or are they underperforming? It's a measure of how much luck are they, in theory, getting from what they're doing. And so we have, again, just to kind of reread through those spots, you have the goals for per 60 minutes at 2.85. Compare that to the expected goals for per 60 minutes at 2.86. So those are nearly identical statistically. There's not much difference there. You can say that they are about as identical as you can get in terms of what's measurable.
Yes.
Now, what that means
in stats speak, I would say that is not a significant.
And you have a master's degree in it, right? Well, look at that. One of us at least maybe has something to contribute here.
Yeah, but even at that, like I am not Emmanuel Perry. I can tell you that much. I honestly don't know if he has more of a stats background or more of a math background. But I'm kind of a novice in by comparison. I'll put it
so
that way.
When we take away from this, here's what we need to realize: is that if they're that close, that means that the Pens are scoring in the ways that they should be scoring, at least for what the shots are that they're generating.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually kind of uncanny that they see, like, you know, if anything, they're, you know, microscopically underperforming their estimate, you know, but even at that, like, once again, that's not a significant difference, no statistical significance.
Right. And that means then, in terms of that question of how sustainable is that play in terms of their offense, it means it's very sustainable. If they continue to generate those scoring chances like they are, and the puck is in theory going to continue to go in the same way, which is really good news for the Pens, because guess what? They're winning. So if they're winning and those two things are not distinguishable, that's a really, really good thing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think, you know, anytime you're looking at a team that, you know, I think if you hover around that 3 goals per game scored mark, and this is something that I do want to get into some research on, but I believe that 3 goals is probably the most common threshold for winning a hockey game, if I had to take a
guess. I mean, I don't know that we're going to have a whole ton of time to get into this, but the Pens are actually right now a negative Corsi 4 percentage team. That they are under 50%. And so that gives you, I mean, we can spend a lot of time talking about what that means in the grander scheme of things. But for right now, if they're winning games and they're being, on average, outshot by their opponent, or out-generated, I don't know if that's the right word, but out-generated by their opponent, I think things are going to continue to go up, knowing how they kind of sputtered in the first, you know, 7 or 8 games of the season.
Yeah, and I think, I've been trying to kind of keep a small eye on it, I guess, or just kind of a passive eye on it. And it does seem like they're getting a little bit better. I mean, I think this time last week they were hovering around 48%, and now they're up to, you know, closer to 49%. They've pretty much drawn even in terms of Corsi attempts for and Corsi attempts against. So, you know, things seem to be pointing in the right direction. And, you know, I think on one hand, you know, we certainly want to see them dominating in the offensive zone, but, you know, if it takes a few more games, few more weeks, that's fine. You know, just keep doing what they're doing.
They're in a lot better spot than they were this time last year.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, that's, well, we won't get into it now, but, you know, there's a strong correlation between being a good shot generating team and doing well in the playoffs. I think pretty much going back to the beginning of the new post lockout era, teams that dominate in terms of generating shot attempts normally go very far in the playoffs. I'll just leave it at that.
So here's where maybe things get a little bit dicey, and this is where we need to do a little bit more interpretation and extrapolation. So in the goals against category, the Pens are looking at the goals against 2.16 per 60 minutes and the expected goals against of 2.48 per 60 minutes. Now, what that translates to is that they've had 22 goals scored against them and their expected goals against is at 25.23. So what does that mean? Andrew, any idea?
Well, so that one is probably a lot closer to being a bit of a statistical significant difference, not to just kind of keep using the same words and promising you that they mean something. But basically that suggests that right now the Penguins maybe are getting above average goaltending, which is actually kind of interesting to me because this is something that I had thrown out to maybe talk about, but I mean, I don't think we're going to get into it in depth. But the thing is that I actually don't think that Marc-Andre Fleury has been all that good this year. You know, and obviously to this point, he's still taken the lion's share of Penguin starts. I mean, obviously, you know, Matt Murray was injured for the first 10 games or so, and then it even seemed like it took another, you know, 1 or 2 games of sitting on the bench before the Pens finally got him into game action. You know, and currently in terms of unadjusted stats, I think Fleury is boasting like a 3.07 goals against average with a 908 save percentage, which, you know, both of those figures would be obviously, I mean, the 3.07 goals against is a lot higher than the 2.16 that the Pens have been allowing per 60 minutes of game action. And the 908 save percentage is a little bit below league average. So, I mean, I don't know if it's just a factor of, you know, Matt Murray has been that good since he came in, but I think it's also, I think those numbers can be a little bit misleading because I don't think, in particular, Fleury hasn't been great with his high danger zone save percentage, which is to say that basically shots coming from right in front of the net, he hasn't done a really good job of defending against those. And part of that has been that he's towards the top of the league in terms of rebound attempts allowed. So he's allowed a lot of rebounds that have turned into additional shooting chances and scoring chances. I'm not saying that Fleury's not going to bounce back. I mean, he was, I think, in the top 10 last year in terms of good performance when it came time to those high danger scoring chances. So I think he certainly will bounce back, but I'm a little just surprised to see that goals allowed per 60 is so low. And I think we're seeing a little bit of that expected goals average, goals against, is elevated a little bit. The Pens have gotten lucky. You know, they're allowing they've allowed fewer goals than maybe they should have, but, you know, I think at a certain point, the goaltending situation is just going to kind of sort itself out. I think both Fleury and Murray will get into a good routine, playing kind of probably on alternating nights or situational factors. And I think there's nothing there though that necessarily alarms me that, the Pens are playing at an unsustainable
rate. And I think that's the point of kind of what we're getting at with this stuff, is that oftentimes, there might be a good, there might be a good indicator in the record of a team or the stats of a player. But as you start to dig into these kind of like possession metrics and the quote unquote fancy stats, you start to see a little bit more of an underlying trend. And I think that what we're seeing with these is that the first probably six games of the season where the Pens, even though they had a winning record, really just didn't deserve to have it.
And they were allowing a lot of goals, I would say, as well. I mean, they were winning, but it was basically because they were scoring a lot. And I think the whole league was that way at the start of the year as well. Until all of a sudden everybody decided to start saving
the puck. Finally. And so that's my point, is that, like, realistically, the Pens have only been playing the way that we've been accustomed to them playing for about five or six games now. And so, like, I think, you know, when you're looking at that and you're saying, like, I mean, Matt Murray has looked really good. Like, he hasn't, like, looked like there's any rust on him whatsoever.
I've been pleasantly surprised, honestly.
He just looks like he's, and I think if anything, it looks like he's even gotten a little bit better than where he was in June. I realize I probably don't have a whole lot of time to qualify that, but looking at just the way that he's making saves, is that, like, he's a goalie who relies on his positioning, which is awesome because he's very, very good at that. But, like, his positioning decisions have been better. Like, and I'm thinking specifically of, I'm thinking of three goals in particular that he gave up against San Jose, where he came off a post or hugged too tightly to a post that he probably shouldn't have. In the games that he's played so far, that has not, one of which has been against San Jose, that hasn't even been a factor. Like, it hasn't even come up in any of those games, So if that had been a known weakness, I think teams would have gone to it to exploit it in the same way that San Jose did in that series. They haven't done it, right? Part of it's the defense of the Penguins, but another part of it has just been that Murray's just been good. Like, he's been really, really good.
Yeah.
I think, absolutely, like, you're looking at, and here's another, number for comparison's sake, the performance differential, the PDO versus the expected performance differential. I mean, what you're seeing, the expected PDO, is that the Pens turn in right around 100.63, which is about as, even close to league average as you can ask for, in terms of what they're expected to produce. The PDO that they actually have is a little bit inflated from that, a 102.04. But again, like, plus or minus two, like, is really not that big of a deal. I mean, you're looking at that could be the difference between allowing, honestly, like, one or two goals.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, even to go back to that, to the goals allowed versus X goals allowed model, it's you know, I mean, it's basically a difference of three goals. And I would say it's even probably a little bit less than that in terms of that 2-point differential. It's pretty, you know, I would say that what the Pens are doing is pretty much totally sustainable. And I don't even think that if you like, I do think that their shooting percentage, I want to say it's like at almost 9% right now, which in its own way is, you know, probably a little bit inflated. You know, we expect that to maybe come down a little bit. And I do think that, part of it could also just be that so far, you know, Murray has not allowed a whole lot of goals at all. He allowed one against Anaheim, none against the Sharks, and then he did allow these three goals against Edmonton. But, you know, four goals in three games played is obviously a very good goals allowed average. And none of them going to overtime, so no extra time or whatever. But nonetheless, I think that's probably pretty much where everything's coming from. And certainly, you know, he might allow, you know, he might have another game where he allows three goals or, you know, maybe even just has a not good game. I think certainly bad habits can creep in again. I think that might be a little bit of what's to blame for Fleury's inflated stats at this point. But, you know, I mean, this looks good. I'd love to see him be driving play a little bit more in terms of their Corsi percentage. But even at that, once again, is if you keep winning, like I can look past it at least until we start to ramp up towards the playoffs, because I feel like that's when that stuff becomes a little bit more.
Yeah, I think here's where I'm excited. The thing that gives me hope that there's more of a that the things that we're seeing right now in the differences between like the shots. Sorry, I'm clicking around trying to bring up a specific thing here on Corsica. But the thing that continues to get me excited and gives me hope that like, yeah, actually, you know what, I think the Pens can continue to do this. It's just that like they're generating a whole lot of scoring chances, like plain and simple. Doing so that like their scoring chances for percentage is 52.08%, which is good. It's one of those things that anytime that you're generating a pretty significantly higher percentage of scoring chances than your opponent, like regardless of if you're just outchancing them in the offensive zone or you're inhibiting them from generating good scoring chances, it doesn't matter how you do it as long as you do it. Like, because that says nothing about save percentage. It says nothing about how your goaltender is performing. We can reasonably expect that whether it's going to be Fleury or Murray, that they're going to turn in at least an average performance, like at the very least. If the Pens continue to outchance their opponents with the skill that they have right now, which we've seen has been a sustainable amount of skill, if they continue to outchance their opponents, like it looks good that the Pens will continue to do what they've been doing. And I think that that's like what we have to kind of continue to harp and all of the stats back that up, right? It's not like that there's one line that's like, this is really the thing that's like, you know, giving us pause for concern. Like we see it in Corsi, we see it in Fenwick, we see it in scoring chances, we see it in goals for and goals against, we see it in all of the mirror stats and the expected things for those categories as well. Like we see it in literally every like statistical category that all of the numbers back it up. That like, do I want to see the Pens be a little bit more dominant than they have been? Yes, but they're still coming out on top on these things, and I can live with that until, you know, if we're still having this conversation 35 games into the season. Well, maybe, you know, maybe this is the new normal. But for right now, I like where they're headed. I mean, look no further than the third period against Edmonton. I mean, 15 minutes into the game after they had tied it at 3-3, the scoring chances were 9-2 Pittsburgh just for that period. And so, like, I mean, that right there tells you, like, Edmonton, you know, is in there. They're controlling the game. Connor McDavid is, you know, usurping the throne from Sidney Crosby. And what do the Pens come? What do? They come in and they go to work, and they pin Edmonton for minutes at a time in their defensive zone and just continue to score greasy goals.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, right now, I don't think we've actually mentioned the actual numbers per, like the per 60 rate stats. And for what it's worth, I don't know if we've really even described necessarily the per 60 aspect of things, you know, but so you can look at just a game summary and, you know, it won't consider like how, like if the game went into overtime or, you know, other factors in terms of, you know, how many actual minutes a player is on the ice, things like that. So one of the things that advanced stats people like to do is to actually use like a per 60 rate stat. Just to kind of keep everything level and even. I mean, it's probably even better for like player, like individual players as opposed to like teams, because, you know, I think within a, over the course of a whole 82 game season, I don't know that even a team that plays an exceptional amount of overtime games would necessarily be playing that much more really overall than a team that ends most of their games in regulation. But so anyways, per 60 stats are still a good way to just normalize across the entire NHL. So there's no question, you know, whether or not you played, you know, an extra 30 minutes in overtime games or if you've played, you know, 5 minutes in overtime. It just helps to kind of normalize those numbers. But right now, you know, 10 scoring chances is about league average per game. And the Pens for the season have been averaging 9.81 per 60. And they've been allowing 9.03. So, I mean, that's basically an entire scoring chance per game difference, which is, I would say, definitely, you know, a significant difference in terms of that. You know, so, and that's a good thing. I mean, that means that even if the Pens aren't necessarily generating as many shot attempts, they're still definitely finding a way to be more dangerous in the offensive zone than they are in the defensive zone.
Well, and I think that's what we have to look at is that, like, and this is what we saw when LA was on top and were, you know, every year it looked like they're going to steamroll people. It wasn't necessarily, like, they won the Corsi battle, not because they just were, you know, necessarily just throwing pucks to the net from wherever, but because they were just limiting the way that their opponents could generate shots. And
right, which gets into a slightly different argument on shot suppression, but we can save that for another.
All that is to say is that the Pens, over the past couple of games, have been doing a better job at suppressing shots, and at the same time adding. Yes. And I think that this is exactly. I mean, there was probably about a 3 minute period of time where the back and forth slog between defensive zone to neutral zone was all played in the Oilers zone. And it wasn't necessarily that the Pens were generating like huge numbers of shots or this like, oh, they outshot them 30-3 in the third period. Like, that was not the case. But what ended up happening was that the Oilers over that time just didn't generate a single shot. And like, that's tough to play against. Like, it's tough when you keep trying to break a puck out of the zone and you just can't do it, especially if you're trying to like control a game. So at that point, you know, the Pens are still down in the score, first 3-1, then 3-2, and eventually they get it tied. And, like, why do the Pens ride momentum in that time period? Well, it's because they're making the Oilers play that 200-foot game. And then when they generate a turnover in their offensive zone, they're either, you know, ripping the puck on net or just dumping it right back in. Just keep it going. Well, in all four of those lines. I wish I had, a stat of like what the ice time totals were for the third period, but like, I think one of the things that makes the Pens so difficult to play against is that like, Mike Sullivan, dear Lord, Mike Sullivan, like, in that down by two situation, he doesn't shorten the bench, you know.
Nah, that's. I mean, I feel like, A, you have to have a really good team. You have to have a Matt Cullen who can, like, who you believe truly can score a goal, like, if he's given the opportunity. You know, I think that's, A, really important, but that's also a tactical thing that, well, I feel like at some point, I will say, I think at some points it can get a little frustrating. Like, I think there were certain points in the Stanley Cup final, for instance, where you could just see that all of the momentum was on like San Jose's side, that they were just generating lots and lots of shot attempts. And yet, you know, he would continue to roll out that third and fourth line. It's like these guys, well, in many ways, it was like he would continue to roll out the second and third lines. And it's like, these are not your shutdown lines, but he would still continue to, you know, basically give everybody almost equal ice time to a certain extent. You know, I think certain fourth line guys still ended a little lower, but not
I'll,
much.
I'll say this. I think that, like, it's good because, like, what does that communicate to the team? It communicates to the team that, like if you're putting the work in, and which is, like, thoroughly a Mike Sullivan thing, like, if you stick to the system, we're going to have success. Like, we've demonstrated that. So stick to the system, and we're going to break through on it. And you know what? By and large, he's right. You know what? The games that they have lost have been ones that they've been undisciplined, that they haven't gotten to, to quote the late great Dan Bylsma, they haven't gotten to their game. The reasons that they're losing games is not necessarily because they just got outplayed and they did so by playing to the system that they've developed. They're doing it because they're breaking out of that system and stepping away from the from that kind of structured and disciplined mindset. And so I'm okay with it. You know what I mean? Like, as long as you have the four lines that you do, I'm okay with it. Because, I mean, the goal that Eric's Fair scored was a snipe. Like, let's not take it away from him. That was an unreal goal. And I don't think he just, like, happened to get lucky. I mean, Fairzy's got some skill in him, right? And if he's that's playing, you know, 14 minutes a night as your, or whatever it is, 12 minutes a night as your fourth liner, like, I'm still okay with that because he's a 15 to 20 goal guy, like, if he's given the ice time. So, like, let him score. Like, screw it.
No. I mean, I'm, you know, totally in agreement with that. I think, I think it is a nice thing to be able to move people around a lot, or to just keep rolling out those lines. And there's something certainly to be said for, you know, if you do really get to a point where, like, you decide you want to kind of double shift Crosby or Malkin or Kessel or whomever, like, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, normally entering the third period, like, you know, those guys are only playing like 12 minutes a night, unless there's like an abnormally high amount of power plays. And even then, that kind of distorts the figure a little bit, because normally when you are on the power play, you're not quite as, like, you're not burning energy at necessarily the same rate, just because you only have to skate, you know, a 60 by 85 area, hopefully, as opposed to like a, you know, 200 by 85 foot area. You know, so, I mean, that's a pretty great thing. In fact, you know, I think on Sheary's goal that won against Edmonton, I don't know if it was the start of a line change or exactly what the situation was, but as I say, I know Crosby was the one who was kind of like dishing the puck around the end board to Sheary, which led directly to that goal. So it's like, you know, if you want to get him out for an extra shift, then, like, because you are in a trailing position or whatever, then that's, you know, that's how you make that happen. And that's a pretty great thing. Yeah.
Well, I think, it's all. Here's what I keep coming back with: they're doing what works. It's working for them, and until we start to see some, like, real breakdowns in the way that they're running their system, I don't see any reason to step away from it.
Yeah, I mean, I get so excited when you do, like you were talking earlier about just, you know, they basically wouldn't let the Oilers even, like, access their attack zone in the third period. And I feel like when the Penguins are at their best, that's how they do it. Again, not to, like, get into a shot suppression kind of discussion, but they, you know, the way that the Penguins structure works best is that neutral zone philosophy, which we have kind of talked about from a tactical standpoint, maybe not necessarily a statistical standpoint. And basically, what, you know, ultimately, if the Pens just don't let the opponent through the neutral zone, or at least make it so hard to get through the neutral zone that normally the team that's trying to do it like can't sustain any long-term pressure. You know, that's how the Penguins tend to win their games. And I think we're starting to see more of it as the season goes on. And once again, it's like, you know, when we're playing these October games, these November games, I'm not that worried to see them like in a completely dominant kind of state, because they don't really need to be. There's something to be said for the fact that I think October and November and even December hockey, I think, looks a lot different than, and I think even by that extension, I think then January, February, March hockey looks different. And then I think as you turn into April and start into the playoffs, like, I think, you know, the way the league looks even changes further. So, whatever it takes to win right now, and they're not doing anything that is kind of raising any alarms or anything like that.
Well,
so.
It seems like the call out from Sullivan 2 weeks ago really did get through. So,
yeah, no, that's pretty fascinating stuff. I've been reading like a book kind of on coaching philosophy. I don't know what I'm going to do with it.
It's for your personal enrichment.
It is, but I feel like it's an awfully specific subset of enrichment to be interested in. But anyway, I've been reading it, and it's a lot of like NCAA college level coaches that have been weighing in. But so kind of the start of the book has all been about just kind of like, how do you convey a team message? How do you create a meaningful sort of mission statement for a team? It's actually pretty interesting stuff, because once again, I don't think you can dismiss out of hand that, you know, that coaching can't motivate a team. And, I think clearly Sullivan's got a pretty good pulse on this team right now. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It's good stuff. Unfortunately, I think we have reached our capacity for this week. With that said, I think it's good stuff, man. It's been fun to actually get into some of the stats now that we have something substantial to work with. And I'm looking forward to continuing to do this and see what, see how the Pens either do or do not bear out what we've been talking about. So with that said, is there anything left that we have to leave our friends with, Andrew?
I feel like every time I want to like say something really neat and important or like meaningful here, and I can never think of anything. And I feel like today I just want to say, you know, to anybody, maybe just like to anybody that's listening to this, and, the election happened and maybe it didn't go the way you wanted it to, or maybe it did go the way you wanted it to. I would just say, we as a people remember why we're proud to be Americans, and just, you know, let's come together and work things through. Make real change.
I hear that. I hear it.
So that's not what I intended to say necessarily, but you know what? Just do it.
Make it happen. Man.
Yeah.
No, that's cool, man. Yeah. I think, we'll continue to come back to it because it's kind of a big deal. Presidents only come around sometimes once every 4 years. So, it's a big deal. I think, for me, I'm a little relieved that things are over now. And just because I'm the kind of guy that wants to figure out what we actually can do once the dust settled. So, I guess I'm just kind of looking forward to, more so February, once kind of the ringing in is done, and we'll see what we actually have here. So, but with that said, I think, if there's one thing that, I can encourage people with, it's that, there's just, I think one of the things that I've noticed, especially over this election season, it's been something that I've been thinking about and, meditating on and praying about, is just, it seems to me that by and large, the culture that we live in is so good at kind of distracting ourselves with the next problem and going from problem to problem to problem and never really actually solving anything. And so I think if there's one thing I can encourage people towards, it's just to kind of sit to listen to where people are hurting and to just sit with it. Maybe not even necessarily to propose a solution, but just to kind of sit with what's going on. It's the old discipline of like lamenting well with people and just kind of sitting with people and the things that they're grieving, whether that's the presidential election or the death of a loved one or even just moving from town to town. It's a good thing to practice. So if you're interested, you know, in that, I guess you can reach out to either one of us, Andrew or I, and we will be happy to chat more about that. So I guess in summary, we honestly, I'll speak for Andrew as well and just say that we're very grateful to everybody that listens to this. It's for sure a pet project, but it's one that's near and dear to our hearts. And so we're grateful for anybody that will come and spend even just a little bit of time with us, hearing us rant about the ridiculousness of elections or nerdy hockey stats. It's fun. We have a good time.
Yes, really appealing to our audience in this
one. Well, hey, sometimes you gotta do that. So with that said, once again, I am Mike Swanson, part of the Reggie's House podcast, joined by Andrew Roman, and we are signing off for this week. So thanks, and have a great day or night.